Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Oh, what's that awful smell? Smells like a... Oh, can you smell that in the air?
No.
Oh, it smells like a spoiled podcast movie.
Spoiler warning.
Peace. I hate the word.
I got one leg and a bucket of chicken.
Gonna put a little cornstarch on my werewolf, man.
Luigi Mario.
Hello and welcome to Mission Zach's Leguizamarama. This is a podcast where each week myself and my little friend get together and
little buddy,
my little buddy, get together and have a chat about something that John Leguizamo has been in, be it a movie or a television show or even maybe a music video if we be so lucky. my name is Mish Wittrup. I'm one of the hosts, and you might know me from not doing anything in the Melbourne International Comedy Festival this year. And I'm joined, as always, by my little friend.
Little bud.
My little bud, Zachary Ruane, who you might know from.
Really missing out on a lot of money by not doing anything in the Melbourne.
Yeah. Do you know what's really bothered me? Is I think we really, really, really should have done some live pods.
Oh, yes. Yes, I was talking about how much money we would have made from Mission Zach's Leguizamarama.
Okay, I realised that if Auntie Donna had done something for Melbourne International Comedy Festival, it might have been a bit more lucrative.
Can I say?
But I was thinking more so just for my branding.
Yeah, no, I need to be very, very clear when I say a lot of money. I mean a lot of money by the standards of someone who's made no money.
Yes.
For a very long time. People forget to divide. People love to, I think people love to do maths and go, I reckon this is how much they make. And they love to do maths and they don't factor in costs and they don't divide it by six.
Well, Reese Nicholson posted something on Instagram the other day that was really funny on his wiki page. It said that his net worth is somewhere between like $1 million and $15 million approximately. And he just wrote, yeah, approximately.
Mine
has... If Reese Nicholson was worth $15 million.
Mine has me between, what is it? That was the best part. That was the best part of getting a Netflix show is...
People trying to guesstimate what your worth is.
I now have a result when you Google Zachary Ruane net worth, and my net worth is 100,000 to a million, according to this website.
That's so funny.
I don't know what that's based on.
Mission Zach's Leguizamarama, obviously.
The thing about net worth, right, like net worth is all of your assets combined.
Yeah.
I rent.
Yeah.
So I think... my net worth is how much I have in the bank and how much I can make off a garage sale.
Yeah.
as a renter, that is my net worth.
It's so funny. I kind of like announced, I suppose, at our Leguizamarama Live at Lido's that I'd been made redundant and had a couple of people ask me, it's like, oh, so are you going to just kind of focus full time on comedy and writing? And it's like, absolutely not.
Absolutely
like,
not.
Like, I can't. I cannot do that. Financially, I cannot do that. I think people think, like, oh, Leguizamarama now, you make a little bit of money. When we say a little bit of money, I mean...
A little bit of money.
It's a little bit of money.
It's a little bit of money. People just assume when someone says, I make a little bit of money, they mean I make money. But when we say, I make a little bit of money, we mean we make a little bit of money.
Do you know what I want?
What?
I want to be able to search.
And also we don't have a bank account. So we actually have not seen any of that money.
No, it's all sitting on invoices.
But that gives you an idea of how little it is that we're not chomping at the bit to get it.
Hey, I'm trying. I've been on the phone to all the banks.
But I'm not stepping in.
Yeah.
I'm not going.
No, you're not.
There are days where I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'll just do it. I'll just call up some people. I'll work it out. And then I go, eh.
Do you know what I really, really want?
What?
I want to be able to search Mish Witchrup net worth.
Yeah.
And just be able, and something to come up, a complete lie. Is it possible for people to create those?
There's something, what I love about...
I want someone to put up there that I'm worth $30 million.
What I love about 100,000 to a million is how wide they've shot and they've still got it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very funny.
It's very funny. Zach's actually worth 2.5.
I'm worth $2.7 million. Well, but that's purely because I bought the townhouse in 87.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, no, back then it was a very industrial area. No, I'm not worth 2.7 million. Oh, I'm God. Worth less than 100 grand. Mish Witchrup, my dear friend.
What are you worth?
What am I worth?
Well, I thought you were going to ask me, Mish Witchrup, my dear friend. How much money are you worth?
I know what you're worth. You've told me what's in your bank account.
Yeah, this is true. When we were buying all those supplies for Leguizamarama Live at Lido, I was like, Zach, I've only got X amount of dollars in my bank account.
So me and Mish are worth between $10 and $1 million each.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Mish is worth $10. She's worth somewhere between
Somewhere in that bracket.
Mish.
Yes, Zach.
It's like, sorry, this is one more thing on net worth. When Anthony Bourdain died, yeah, that's funny. this is a comedy podcast and I'm talking about that. But when Anthony Bourdain died, like, it was one of these really, really clear examples of how terrible net worth is because I think most predictions had him at like 3 times what it was revealed he was actually worth. He was worth millions.
Yeah.
But not like, I think people had him pegged at like tens of millions. And then there was this quote in an interview from him where he said, he was like, they're wrong because no one knows how much I spend.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, yeah, they know how much I make roughly.
Yeah.
No one knows how much I spend. I was like, that's very good.
Funny you say that. When Robin Williams died.
Yep.
I cried.
Yeah, I didn't. But I'll tell
you. Where were you? Do you remember?
Yes, I know exactly where I was.
Same.
I was at my first Edinburgh Fringe, and I think I've mentioned this to you. Edinburgh Fringe, just because it's been going for 50 years and everyone was trying to get the edge on everyone else. There's like 5,000 shows. So in Melbourne, you perform every single night except Mondays for the month, right? And Edinburgh Fringe, that I think was the case.
Uh-huh.
And then someone had the bright idea to perform on 2 of those Mondays out of the 3. They were like, if I perform, then I'll get all the sales. Everyone else was like, well, we've got to do that. So Edinburgh Fringe is 30-plus days and you have one Monday off in the middle. That's the sort of general thing. So I have been performing for 14, 15 shows in a row. A show that featured a sketch that you can watch in our Netflix show about Ellen DeGeneres where I screamed. I was doing severe damage to my voice, breathing steam every single fucking day.
Yeah.
14 nights in a row. I was so fucking done and I had one day off in the middle of it and it was like that was my oasis. That was my, like, everything was building to that. And then once I had that day, I would use the energy from that to get through the next 14 days. And Robin Williams died that day.
Oh, fuck.
I was at a party, which was stupid. I should have.
Yeah, but hold on a second.
I was like 25, whatever. Now what I would do if I had that day, first, I wouldn't do that again.
Yeah.
Secondly, if I had that day, I would go for a swim and then watch a movie and then be in bed early. But instead I was at a party and at that party, that's when we found out and people were like locking doors and crying and it, like an irrationally large reaction to someone they'd never met dying. But people were on edge.
Mm.
It was a lot. And it was, that was my day. That was my one day. And that's why I remember it quite selfishly.
That's so much more full on than my story of where
but,
I was.
But, you know, fun fact, neither of our stories are as full on as Robin Williams' loved one's stories on that day.
That's a good point, yeah.
Sorry, that's full on. What was your story?
I was working at a call center.
Fun.
And I was on the phones and it was the morning, so it would have been like 9 or 9.30. And I was on a call doing a survey about a telecommunications company that we'll just call Melstra. Really, is that very illegal?
What you just did?
Yeah.
I don't care.
No, neither do I.
No one from Telstra is listening to this.
Imagine if they are. And I didn't say that. You said that. Sue him, not me. Anyway, and I was on the call, I was doing a survey, like, so, like, your last experience with Melstra, would you give it on a scale of 0 to 10? At the same time, I was scrolling on my phone just looking at news and articles and
stuff.
So you
were in
like
the
that,
middle of a...
Middle of a call.
That's so funny.
And I got an alert that said Robin Williams had died. And I just kind of was like, the fuck? And then when we went on break, I didn't know anyone at this call center. It was one of those weird situations where a lot of people, I'd only just started at this call center. And there were a lot of people there. And I hadn't made friends with anyone. Like, I didn't know anyone. So when it came to break, and they all knew each other. So when it came to break time, they all took lunch together. But I would, like, go down the shops and stuff because I just didn't know anybody.
Yeah, that's a really shitty bit.
So I went and sat in my car and I had a cry.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
Were you having a cry as much because of that circumstance?
I was crying because I had no friends to comfort me.
Yeah.
And also because Robin Williams had just died.
Because I feel very, like, funny about people. I think there are – I think everyone probably – I give people, like, three. This is – I think three is my number of, like, you're allowed three celebrities in your life that you're allowed to, like, give a shit about.
Okay.
Because I think there are certain people that, like – care too much about the death of a person they've never met.
I hear what you're saying. I'd never cried when someone had died.
Robin Williams is one of your three.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And I haven't cried since. But I'm sure there would be a couple, throw a couple in there and I'd have a cry.
Well, I think the thing about Robin Williams is when you're a comedian, a sad clown, all of that, it evokes things for you. I think I've known people that were very, very upset that night. And it's like, well, because they were comedians.
Yeah.
And it's not so much.
And just the way he went and stuff like that, it's kind of like it's, you know, for someone, that all that standard stuff, like he brought so much happiness to everybody and clearly was the sad clown, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like I think that's when I'll give someone a pass.
Oh, thank you.
I'm not talking about you. I'm giving you the pass. I was upset when Robin Williams died. I give someone a pass when it's like, oh, this for me evokes my own personal experience.
Did you cry when Bowie died?
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't. I like Bowie's music very much, but I don't know the man. This is something I get a bit funny about. I get.
Yeah, but he's not going to make any more music now. Like,
what was the last Bowie album you listened to?
Shut up.
No, but this is my point. Like people are like, oh, I'm so sad. I think here's the two things I'll give someone, like, and this is coming from a place, there are people that will do like a post every celebrity that dies.
Yeah.
And it's like, I never heard you talk about that person once and now you're listening to them every day. Come on now. I'm talking about that person. I'm not talking about like.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
You know, like I think that it's two situations where I think it's, like, fair. One is if their art meant a lot to you and they were taken before their prime or, like, before. So someone like a Heath Ledger, potentially, like, that was one that hit me. Not, like, heaps, but I was like, oh, that's really sad because this is an actor I really, you know.
Quick side note, he died on my friend's birthday and she cried because she felt like it had ruined her birthday, like that everyone was paying attention to his death and not her birthday. Very funny.
That's very funny.
Yeah.
Do I know this friend?
Nah. Okay. Someone from my prestigious private all-girl school.
That's the most all-girl school story I've ever heard in my life.
She was really sad. She was like, it's not fit. Like, she's like, it's not that. Of course, we're all sad. Like, we all loved 10 Things I Hate About You. But it's my 19th or some shit like that. Everyone was just like, shut the fuck up. Like...
But this is the point, right? I if someone is making art that is very important to you and their death means that that art is no longer going to, you know, continue to come to you, that's understandable, right? Yeah. The other thing I would say is when it evokes personal feelings, when an artist represents for you more than, you know. So if you're a comedian with depression and Robin Williams was an important outlet, that makes sense to me because you're actually upset about your own personal experiences.
I get you.
But there are people, like remember that year where a bunch of celebrities died and people were like, no, this is the worst year ever.
Yeah.
And it was like all of them were like, not only, I'm not talking about the deaths are sad.
Yeah.
I just take issue with like someone.
The taking it personally kind of thing.
Like it's like that human being who you never met. I'm getting, this is not funny. That human being who you never met has like husbands and wives and partners and ex-partners and children and like parents and family and siblings and they are grieving. And that's fine. Like feel your feelings.
Mm.
But like. Come on. There are people that were just like, oh, my God, this person's dead. And I'm like, are they even in your Spotify top 100?
I do hear what you're saying. I personally am not affected by celebrity deaths. Robin Williams was the only one. And I think it was the whole sad clown me dealing with my own shit
kind of stuff, right? That's fine.
Yeah, thank you. So I hear what you're saying. Particularly about the people who do the posts every single time, like where they're like, Alan Rickman, I loved you in Love Actually. Like,
yeah.
It's like, shut up.
Cool, man. But, you know.
Go watch Die Hard, cunt.
That's your, you know, everyone, like, that's their journey. That's their journey. I just watched Michelle Brazier's show and she tells us to be nice to those people.
Exactly. No, but that's my point. It's like, yeah, that, like, I'm not affected by them, but. I think death hits people in different ways.
Absolutely. And
I think I see it as like, I didn't cry when Alan Rickman died, but I really like Alan Rickman and how sad that he won't make any more movies.
Yeah. And I felt that about.
And I would say like for a loud three passes, I was just thinking then like while you were talking, because as we've established, Zach and I don't listen to each other. We just wait to speak. While you were talking then, I was like, who else would that have? And I think. As wanky as it sounds, I think if Nick Cave died, I'd be sad, not because he's not going to release any more music, because let's be honest, some of the music he's released recently isn't that good, but because he came into my life like many 19-year-old girls who are dealing with some shit and his music really helped or really defined that era of my life, that little kind of like, you know, chapter of my life. So I think if he died, I'd be really, really sad. But also, you're right, like, why would I be sad? I'm not sad because I can't hug him one last time because cunt's never met me and would hate me.
I was like, sad.
How much would Nick Cave hate us? No, he might like you.
No, I don't think he'd hate us. I think he would feel like, I think he would just be like, I don't have space in my, like, heart for two podcasters from Melbourne. Do you know what I'm saying? He would just be like, nice to meet you. I've got my friends.
Yeah. I'm sure he
does. I'm going to go home. But it was lovely to meet you.
Yeah, fair. So I think that that one would hit me pretty hard. I also think that like, oh.
I think it's the ones that shock you. And it's the one, like I imagine, like I'm really, this is not funny. This is quite a sad little conversation. I only got into Sophie recently after she passed away, and I think that would have been very hard for people, and that would be one I would totally understand.
It hit my partner pretty hard.
Yeah, like I think, I think also people that have a similar lived experience to her, and that's where I go. It's understanding what our relationship is with an artist and what we own of their work.
Mm.
And when that is taken from us, I think that's fair. But it's also important, like, I just, there are people that are very, like, that really insert themselves into that and really are very, like, oh, I'm so sad about, and it's just like,
oh, but like, were you listening to them yesterday?
Yeah.
Or were you watching their movies? Yes. And then that's who I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the person who, like, you know, listens to that artist every single fucking day. And then, like, you know, that is all.
Like, do you think you'd be sad if Troye Sivan died?
I would be like, oh, that's really
sad. Because you listen to him.
A bit, yeah.
Quite a bit.
Not like heaps. I'd be sad if, like, but no, I wouldn't. I would be like, oh, that's awful. That's really awful for the people that know him. That's really sad that he won't make any more music for me. But I don't know him.
No.
And it would be, I think, a little selfish of me to be like, ooh. But if a young, like, if a young gay kid who, like, got a lot from what he was giving them and
he was like a hero figure. Yeah, Troye Sivan is not your hero.
No.
You like his music while you go for a walk with your dog.
Yes, yes.
But he is not your hero.
Yeah, I've been through, I was sad when Leonard Cohen died. And I was sad for a couple of reasons. I was sad because of, like, what he represented. And I was also sad because I'll never get to see him live. I always wanted to see him live. But then I'm also very aware of, like how kind of parasitical that is. It's like, I'm sad because he wasn't able to give me.
Yeah, he stopped playing music for me.
Yes. Yeah. But that's all it is.
Yeah.
That's all my relationship is with that. I don't even have a relationship with that person.
Isn't it interesting as well, though, that as we get older, because I was just thinking now, I used to have big celebrity crushes.
Mm.
And I'm not talking like sexy crushes. I had a lot of those too. But I'm talking like celebrities that I was really in awe of.
It's the I think I know them.
Yes.
Like, I reckon I know what they're like.
Absolutely. I remember the first time I saw the Mighty Boosh.
Mm.
And I was late to the game with the Boosh. I think the Boosh came out in 2009. And I didn't.
It was earlier than that, I think.
That was when it ended then. 2009 was like a year for it. And I didn't start watching Boosh until 2013.
Yeah, right.
And I remember the first time I saw Noel Fielding in the first season of Boosh. There was a part of me at 24 years old, I was 25, where I was like, oh, I get him and he gets me. And I had I was like, oh, yeah, this cunt, he's got it.
Yeah.
And I was just so into him. And now at 33 years old, it's just kind of like I can't imagine having that now because I think I've kind of defined myself now without the need for like celebrity input. I don't know.
Celebrity input, I like that. I like that.
I just don't – the whole celebrity worship thing or the kind of like even influencers, you know, like people – like my housemate wouldn't mind me saying that she loves a lot of Instagram influencers. I don't get that either. It's just that kind of like – I like the people in my life. I would much prefer to be influenced by you or by other friends and family and stuff than.
Do you think there's an
celebrity?
Element?
I don't know.
There's an element because you do this, because this is like you know it, you're adjacent to this world of putting that you know that there's complexity to it. Like you know what you put out versus. Who you actually are. Like, yes. You're a bitch.
Yeah, because I am. I'm a real nasty cow.
No, you're not.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But should we talk about the movie, Mish?
Yeah, let's talk about the film.
Great.
What did we watch this week, Zach?
We watched Hollow Point. Here's my...
And why did we watch the Hollow Point?
Because you told me to.
Yes, and the reason I told you to was because I put a poll on Instagram.
You did.
And it was between The Hollow Point and Casualties of War. And both you and I voted for Casualties of War. So I could have just asked you which would you prefer.
I liked that you did a poll and we both voted. That's funny. Yeah. That's the funniest liar.
This is so funny. I could have just seriously had a conversation with you saying, which one would you prefer? And you would have said Casualties of War. I'm like, same. And we would have just watched
that.
Or you
could have just said, I would prefer to watch Casualties of War. And yeah. I would have gone, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so we ended up watching The Hollow Point. And this is because everyone on Instagram
chose
The Hollow Point.
Here's my description. Hollow Point is a movie that was on while I did some odd jobs. Some of those odd jobs included responding to an email from my agent, planning to see as many shows as possible at MICF, and making lunch. As far as I could tell, Hollow Point tells the story of a guy played by Patrick Wilson, who, as an aside, played a pedo in the first movie I ever saw him in, and I've never really been able to shake it.
I try so hard. Just quickly, he's also been in a commercial for The Gap where he's doing like swing dancing, and all I see is a swing dancing pedo. I can't stop.
I really.
He's in an episode of Girls. He's just a pedo in Girls. I can't.
Is he a pedo in Girls?
No, he's not.
No, but that's it.
But he is though now.
He's a pedo in Watchmen. Anyway, played by Patrick Wilson, who becomes a sheriff of a border town where bullets get smuggled into Mexico after the guy from Deadwood shoots a guy. Also, another guy bashes up another guy. Patrick Wilson is a good man and doesn't want to be a bad man like all the bad men in the story, but slowly becomes a bad man. There is also a subplot featuring Patrick Wilson's ex, played by not Michelle Monaghan, who turns up from time to time and talks about the themes of the film. Johnny plays the baddest man. He's like a psycho killer. He's not particularly relevant to the plot until the last maybe 20 minutes, and then he's like the most relevant thing in the plot.
Oh.
The cinematography was really, really, really good.
Very No Country for Old Men.
Very No Country for Old Men. There were some really, like, nice choices. I read a review for this film while the film was on.
Which review?
Just like a Variety review or something. And it was a really nice point about the cinematography where it was they made interesting choices, and they did. Really lovely.
I thought that it was a nice, like, visual watch. I can imagine why it would be nice to have on in the background while you were doing odd jobs. I just attempted to watch it.
I did. You know, sometimes you just can't.
Jim Belushi's in it.
Sometimes you don't have the 2 hours and that you either don't watch it or you have it on.
That's fair.
And that's why I'm not going to go in
hard. That's what I was going to do for the take. I was ready to do odd jobs when I put the take on, but the take just grabbed me.
Yeah, and this one, like I said, but yes.
There was no grabbing with this one. I'm sorry. The take literally took me by the scruff of the neck, grabbed me and pulled me along. Mm. Loved the take. This movie, at the very least, stroked my hair.
Yeah.
Once or twice.
I don't think it's fair of me to give this film much of I didn't give it the best chance. But it didn't grab me.
No, there was...
That's of note.
Yeah.
But also I really didn't give it a good chance.
So the thing with this movie, like a lot of films like this movie, is that they're trying to make everyone look like the bad guy. Mm. There's a lot of villains. So there's a lot of snarling and a lot of asides and a lot of, like, when someone leaves the room, the camera goes back to that person and their facial expression changes from a smile to a glare. It's kind of like, and I don't, in this particular film, know why they did that with everyone when it was very obvious who the bad guys were because they were chopping people up.
It was very, I will say, I did watch some of this in double time and I put it into double time and, like, they were going, but the pacing felt better.
Yeah, it was a slow-moving bit.
I liked it. I liked it. Like, I think if I had watched it properly, I would be giving it, like, points for...
What's disappointing is I would have said this movie should have been shorter, but it was only an hour and 25 minutes. So what I'm saying is this movie should have been a commercial.
I think it should have been tighter. And I think that, like,
like, I don't know. It just is very, because I keep being like, oh, with movies like this, you need authenticity. But it's not like the Coen brothers have been out to there. Like, the Coen brothers are and Old Country for Old Men has.
But, okay, the difference is, though, is that the Coen brothers are talented.
Oh, stop it. You're being a nasty bastard.
Am I? Look, I try really hard to not come into these things being like, ugh. I just thought that this film was boring.
Yeah.
And I think that that's fair to say. Yes, cinematography, very good. Yes, John Leguizamo with the aviators and the fucking sheriff get-up and the, oh, I'm a hitman, love that, very good. I just don't think... Oh, my God, the director also directed Apollo 18. I thought it said Apollo 13.
That was Ron Howard. He did. I looked him up, and I haven't seen any of his other films, but before this, he did two horror movies.
Yeah.
And you can see that. There's a couple of moments that are very horror in their editing.
When the pedophile Patrick Wilson... when Patrick Wilson goes into some house where John Leguizamo's hiding, because John Leguizamo's a hitman,
mm-hmm.
John Leguizamo sneaks up on him and cuts off his arm with a machete.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. Great little moment.
That bit was really good.
Really well done. Because this guy is a... Because I didn't even realise that he'd done horror films. Makes sense.
Mm.
And then to get away, Patrick Wilson pins John Leguizamo against a wall and takes his bloody nub.
I loved this.
It takes his bloody nub arm. So it literally cut off his arm. Not cut off a finger, not sliced his arm a bit. Cut off his fucking arm from the elbow. And he takes his little bloody nub, spurting blood, and just rubs it in John Leguizamo's face.
I loved that. I was like, if this movie had more of that.
Yeah. And then Patrick Wilson runs away, and then John Leguizamo, at best, looks mildly miffed.
Yes.
It was kind of like, if someone took their bloody nub arm and rubbed in my face, I'd vomit.
Yeah.
I'd be like, stop, please, don't do that.
Yeah, I would
please,
be like,
stop it,
this
stop.
Is awful, this is awful.
This is horrible. What would you say? Okay, Zach, hypothetical
mm-hmm,
for you.
Mm-hmm.
I've had my arm chopped off by John Leguizamo.
Am I? Okay.
You're there. You've seen
him
do it.
So I'm not John Leguizamo.
No, you're not John Leguizamo in this case.
Okay.
John Leguizamo has cut off my arm with a machete.
Okay.
Right? In an old abandoned house.
Sorry, I'm really distracted by the No Country from Old Men comparison that you made earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's this movie's a lot like No Country for Old Men.
But not as good.
No, but it's very funny. Like, it would have come out, I imagine, around the same time. That's probably how it got, like, the money. There's the whole... Anyway, I'll come back to this. Anyway, tell me. You've John Leguizamo...
With a machete.
I'm John Leguizamo adjacent.
Yeah.
He's just chopped off your arm with a machete.
I then come up to you... To you. And rub my bloody stub in your face.
Yeah.
What do you say?
I don't say anything. I go... And then you run away. Now, what happened in the movie? That's what John Leguizamo did. You can come for a lot of this movie, but I loved that bit.
I think that you would. I loved that movie too. I liked that. No, I loved that scene in this movie.
Thought it was good as well.
Yeah, the most horror-esque. And Mama loves horror. I just thought it was just that was the best part of the film. It's worth watching just for that scene, I suppose.
No, just watch the scene.
This is something that I think that movies get away with too much. Okay, Patrick Wilson lost his arm at work.
Okay.
He's a sheriff.
Do you know what I... Okay.
He lost his arm at work. There are codes of conduct.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Like,
he then
dragged himself to his partner's house and nearly bled to death next to his partner's house rather than go to fucking hospital.
Yeah.
I realise they're in a border town, there is no medical, but get an Uber. To cab, don't contact somebody, Ubers, call someone, know. Call someone. You've lost your arm, you're bleeding out. He then goes back to work.
Mm.
Like you would. If my arm got cut off at work, they would offer me a substantial amount of money, keeping in mind, of course, I'm redundant. So, like, don't have a job. But, well, I do. I do have a job. Let's make that very clear. Anyway, he went back to work. Like, you wouldn't just take the money and be like, firstly, I'm scarred.
Mm-hmm.
My arm is gone. He just went back because he had to find the guy that took the bullets.
Mm.
Like, what is wrong with you? No one loves their job that much. Mm. Maybe he loves being a sheriff. Maybe he's maybe when he was a little boy, his papa bought him a sheriff costume.
Mm.
And little baby Patrick Wilson put on that sheriff costume. Well, I'm going to be a sheriff one day, Dad.
Mm.
And he said, yes, you are, son. And then he grew up always wanting, and then he went to fucking police academy. And he studied hard, top of his class, of his class. And then he became a fucking sheriff. And he's like, I can't believe I did it. I'm a fucking sheriff. Look at me go. Even that person who loves their job, you lose an arm at work.
Yeah.
You don't need to know what happened to the man who stole some bullets. Although he did have that guy in a bath and like it was a psychopath. But like you then wouldn't just go to your mates, hey guys, I've got to obviously stay at home for a couple of months, get some serious therapy and also like look after myself.
I would
could
believe,
you please go
can
find
I say
the psychopath?
That I would believe that the character would want to get back into it. I know people that are like that. I know people that would lose an arm and go, I've got to get back to work.
2 days later.
Yeah, I do know people like that. I do. I 100% know people like
who?
That. I know people like that. From my hometown, people like that, 100%. What I don't believe is that, like, the systems that are in place wouldn't stop him from doing that. It's also very funny that because I had a similar moment in the film where I had that thought, where I thought, it's funny because I'm not, like, buying the police procedural element of this film. But it's funny because the moment I thought that was when he finds a gun in a toilet, what's the top bit?
The top of a toilet.
Where you flush?
A toilet flush.
No, the bowl. Top bit.
The top of the toilet.
It's not, it's got a name.
What's the name? The toilet top.
Toilet top? Toilet.
Top of the toilet. Lid, toilet
cubicle.
Lid.
No, you know what? I'm not talking about the lid. I'm talking about the bit with
you take it off and then you do the
flush bit.
Yeah, the flush bit of a toilet.
Yeah, what's it called?
It doesn't have a name, Zach.
Oh, it has a name.
It's called the top of a toilet.
It's got a name. Toilets.
The back of a toilet.
No, like a toilet.
Are you looking at parts of a toilet?
Cistern. No, cistern? Toilet cistern.
Let's look up parts of a toilet. That might be just talk amongst yourselves.
It's a toilet
yourselves.
Cistern. It's a cistern.
A cistern.
It's called a cistern.
Define cistern. A cistern, a tank for storing water, especially one supplying taps or as part of a flushing toilet.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Go on.
That's why I know people that were cut off there because I'm a man. I know the word for toilet bits. Plumbing boy.
Nothing says bloke. Like knowing what a cistern is.
Oh, you got a problem with your plumbing? I'll come in, I'll watch a YouTube video and have a go at fixing it. But he finds a gun in a little sandwich lock bag in the cistern. It's like evidence. And he just like picks it up with his hand that hasn't been chopped off. And he just picks it up. And I'm like, that's evidence.
Yeah. There's like, so many.
Get things. Out of that house, go get a warrant. It's funny, though, because what you've described, which happens earlier in the film, is a much more egregious example. But I was like, oh, yeah. I'm watching the movie. Hey, he's back to work. And then 4 scenes later, he picks up a gun in a cistern. And I'm like, no, no, no.
No, 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 Patrick Wilson.
No, 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 Patrick Wilson. No, no, no.
Someone also asked us to discuss the attractiveness of Patrick Wilson. Again, very attractive. Really hard to see him as anything else other than the pedo from Hard Candy.
Yeah, I don't. I don't know what my opinion's worth on this front, but he looks a bit too much like people I know. Like he I think of him as the Hard Candy pedo.
Yeah. He's very good in that movie because I think he would probably say that. I don't think we're alone in that. I think a lot of people see him as the Hard Candy pedo.
Which is great. And it's like clearly like against type casting. That's why it's so good.
Yeah.
Because he's like a charming, handsome, nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's nice and he doesn't seem like that bad of a guy. And that's the whole point. He's been cast against type in that film.
Mm.
And it's just tainted him for me.
Yeah, I get that.
No, I thought that was, I thought the whole film, I liked how it tried to blend genres, but I thought that it...
What genres? Horror and...
I would say more like neo-Western and noir.
You like that it tried to do that because it didn't very well.
I respect the film for trying something. Mish, I often think when you're sitting there and just tearing apart a film, I think, what if Mish made a film and I just invited all the people?
Oh, my God.
I'm just playing.
No, it's not that the movie was the worst thing I've ever seen. It's not The Counselor.
The Counselor, I'll go. Yeah. You give me. I think this movie was trying something and it didn't get there. Put it more in that category than The Counselor.
Which John is it, by the way? Is it Dad Guzamo?
Well, it's Psycho-Zuamo.
It is Psycho-Zuamo. Because we also last week came up with Daddy Guzamo, which is not to be confused with Dad Guzamo. Daddy Guzamo is like.
Also, like
sexy daddy.
Lead Guzamo. Do you know I couldn't tell. I found, here's something I struggled with watching this film. I found the fact that John Leguizamo was playing the like heartless, anonymous killer distracting because I was like, that's John Leguizamo. That like, but then I was like, but is that only a problem for me?
Yeah.
Because I've watched everything John Leguizamo's been in, you know, like, but I'm like, that's a part that to me should go to like a no name.
Well, see, I hear what you're saying. I have this problem now that whenever I see John Leguizamo in any film at all, my instinct is to say, it's John Leguizamo.
Yeah.
Like, I just get excited to see him rather than like, you know. I believed him to be a cold-hearted hitman killer.
I thought he did a good job, but I think, like, now that we talk about, what was the movie with the people in it?
Which one?
The No Country for Old Men. Mm. Javier Bardem, at that point, wasn't particularly well-known in Western cinema, in, like, American cinema. Mm. That was the first time I'd ever seen him.
Do you mean like a Christoph Waltz in Inglourious Basterds?
Yeah. Like, I think that if someone's an anonymous killer, but he was more than that. He's not even, like, Javier Bardem is in it heaps. He's more like a Switchblade Romance. Like, he's more like a Mike Myers, like, just anonymous killer. For most of the movie, he's just this, like, and I'm like, that's John Leguizamo.
Yeah.
That's Tibble. Like, I think you almost don't need an actor for that part. Like, I know you do towards the end because it's – but, like, also, like, I think for that part you should just get, like, a 7-foot-tall, like, muscly cunt and just have
like
him –
like Channing Tatum?
No. Like a
– what do you think? Do you think the movie would have been better or worse if Channing Tatum played the role – that John Leguizamo played in this film?
I feel like his character... No, it would have been much worse because he's even more well-known. I think that that character should have been played by, like, a guy the director knew. It felt like a horror trope. It felt like a horror character. It should have just been, like, this 7-foot-tall dude who looked funky. You know what I mean? Like... And then I think the whole movie should have been about him. But then, and then I realized that's just No Country for Old Men.
Mm.
The whole movie should have been about there's a guy going around killing people on a list.
Yeah.
Who's doing it? Why are they doing it? Oh, it's related to the bullets.
Mm.
Let's go down that path. But it was not that. And I think that would have made it better. It was just a little muddy. And it was a little.
Muddy's a good word, actually.
And it was a little, like you said. Just a lot of like Patrick Wilson.
Everyone was just mad. It's like, I don't know. I just wanted someone to come in like a goof. I just wanted a goof to come in. Just the town goof.
But I was thinking that as well when I was watching. I was like, you know how like people in movies are like grr. Like, but you know how there's good movies where everyone's serious and everyone's nasty and everyone's self-important and there's like good movies like that. Like like No Country for Old Men is a great example, but there's other ones. Like noir is that. Like that is noir. It's just like people walking around being like mean. Like Bruce Willis has built the latter half of his career on it.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? So... My question is, why does it then not work in a film like this? Is it casting? Is it writing? Is it like a believability of choices? Does that make sense? Like, does that person have to be
Like, even though they're, like, snarly and growly.
I actually think for this one it was storyline, which is odd because it is the same storyline as No Country for Old Men, and No Country for Old Men is an amazing film. To me, this was just a very boring story. And I found it really, really hard to be invested in any of the characters. Like,
yeah.
I just wanted, like, when I know at the end of the film when it's kind of like a shooty film, like lots of gun, bang, bang, and there is no one that I necessarily want to live.
Yeah.
That's when I know that the movie hasn't gotten me, because I like to be invested in a character. And even if they're a baddie, I like to be invested in. Okay, have you ever seen Leon the Professional?
Yes.
Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
Totally, like, he's, fuck, that's a good performance.
Yeah.
I was so invested in his character.
Yeah.
And he's a big bad boy. But
there's colour.
There's colour. And in this film, it was just like, it got to the, when Jim Belushi from Curly Sue and Patrick Wilson and that guy from Deadwood are all shooting at each other. I was just like, I don't care who dies. And then someone gets shot, like, who got shot? And it ended up being that woman. I didn't care. I was just like, all right, I don't care.
I agree with you. I think that really nails it, right? Like, plot, which is action, which is like action and drive and like the thing about characters like that, when it's a Bruce Willis at his best, is that character comes into that scene with a singular purpose.
Yep.
And they're gruff and they're rude. They're gruff and they're rude. I think that, like, when those sorts of characters, their whole shtick is no nonsense, right?
Yeah.
Their whole shtick is.
But imagine if that person was real. Imagine if they were in your life.
That's what I was trying to work out, right? Because I was like, that is real. There are people like that.
Not in my bubble.
Yeah, but there are people like that, right? There are people like that in that sort of world. So I was like, so why is it so unbelievable in this movie? And I think you nailed it. When you talk about plot, like, good plot is action. It's about people doing things. And there's a lot of scenes in this movie where people aren't, like, really doing something. Like, there's not, like, a purpose. They're not coming into the scene with a really, like, specific purpose. And if your character is, if every single character in the story is like, no nonsense, I don't give a shit, get to the point, go fuck yourself, but they don't have a purpose.
Yeah.
Then their action is the I don't give a fuck, I'm no nonsense.
Very interesting you said that. When I wrote my show, The Hitmen, the first time I wrote it, it was like a four-hour show. And I was like, wow, this sucks. Like, it's so long. But I didn't want to kill my babies. I didn't want to edit it. Like, I didn't want to cut anything. And I remember Sam Lingham read it. Sam Lingham from Titan AE episode fame. He read it. And I was like, I'd love your feedback. And he had, like, circled a whole bunch of scenes. And he was like, this one should be cut and this one should be cut. And this one. I'm like, oh, no, we can't cut that. That's like, I really like how that's written and this is so funny and this bit and this is so funny and this bit. And he said to me, he's like, what are they doing in this? Like, what do they want from this scene? Like, how is this moving the story forward at all? I'm like, well, it's not, but it's aside. It's an aside. And he's like, then cut it. It's like, it doesn't matter how well written it is or how funny it is. If an audience is watching it and it's not propelling the story that they've gotten invested in, they'll not only resent the scene but start to resent the story that's not moving.
That's very articulate.
Yeah.
No, and it's very
true. He didn't
say
it exactly like that. He would have just been like, because it's not very good.
No, well, but that's exactly it.
Yeah.
And I think that there was a point when I was watching this film, actually, where I thought, I think they wrote scenes before they worked, like they beat out the plot. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Like, I think, and that's a fine way. I know you write that way, but it's like, that's fine. But this was a movie that needed that, like, clarity of.
Like, as you were saying that, I was like, are you being critical of that? Because that is literally how I write.
It's a fine way to write, but you have to at some point do what you're talking about. You have to at some point edit to that.
Yeah, and and when doing that, you then have to kill your babies. And I think that this guy who directed Apollo 18, apparently that's a thing, he should have probably been more willing to kill his babies.
He didn't write it.
Okay, true. Well, whoever wrote it, it's a 1 hour and 25-minute movie, and I feel like it could have just been like an episode of television.
I think that there could have been more plot. I think the movie could have been that length and been tighter and been, you know, like just more, like just you know, finding out who, and that's fine. Mm. But this is the thing. This is why I don't like being too harsh on people when I do this now, which is hard because that's like the way to fill an hour. Because I often think when I think like that, right? When
I'm not hard on the one. Like, I'm not hard on everything.
No, you're not.
I'm just honest, and it's hard to go into something and be like, "Oh, well, this was really good." When at the end of the day, this movie wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen. It's not a piece of shit, but I was bored.
No, and I'm so glad that one of us is flying that flag of this movie wasn't very good when we do this, because I've made a decision and it's a shackle, but. What I think is good, but like where I come around to it, or like what, like is like, that's not probably the writer's fault. They probably didn't have the time or money to do the rewrites that we're saying it needed. Like it probably was at a point and it needed to go further.
Okay, fair enough.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I hear what you're saying.
They weren't very good, whatever. But it's like,
no, I do hear what you're saying.
It's just interesting. I don't know. Sometimes I look at movies like and I go, what's wrong? Why is it wrong?
Do you know what it is about this film? And I think that this is a very good kind of indication of whether or not a film was enjoyed by me or not. In 2.5 years' time, when we finish up this podcast and we wrap this podcast.
Wrap it up tightly.
And we sit down and have a non-alcoholic beer to discuss the last 3 years and the end of our friendship. And you said to me, remember the hollow point?
Yeah.
I won't remember it.
Yeah, no.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of the 120 to 150 episodes that we're going to make of this podcast, I will not remember this film or anything we discussed this afternoon.
No. I often find myself surprised. Tom will tell me. He'll say, hey, good job last week. And I'll be like, well, I don't remember this.
Again, Tom, thank you always for listening to these pods.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
How many
Leguistamos are you going to give this one? Keep in mind that he was good.
But I think he was too well known for what the part was.
All right, yep.
But or I knew him too much.
I don't think he had enough to work with, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think he had enough to work with. Mm. I think that the part should have been that simple, but they should have just gone for like a hulking.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish it had been a little more like down that path, like just that stubby arm up on the face, just more fucked weird shit. Do you know what I mean? Weird fucking
shit. That stubby arm to the face, that was like, I was like, now we're cooking with fire.
That stubby arm to the face, right, was like, I was like, oh, okay. I was watching the movie. I'm like, oh, it's a bit noir. It's a bit Western. It's a bit like horror. He's using some of his horror. And then he did stubby arm to the face. And I'm like, this is like nothing I've seen before.
Yeah. But then after having stubby arm to the face scene, the rest of the movie had nothing like that in it. It was this.
And more of that. Like imagine the movie just being like hacking.
I would have been happy if it was just like, I would have been happy if every 20 minutes he just put his stubby arm in someone's face.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
Oh, we didn't even talk about, I really wanted to talk about not Michelle Monaghan. And like there's like literally a bit where I just want to say this one bit and then we'll give the rating. There's literally a bit where Patrick Wilson, like the whole arc I think is meant to be Patrick Wilson turning bad.
Okay.
Like that's kind of, I think, the idea is he wants to be a good cop. And the reason I know this is because there's scenes where people say, I thought you wanted to be a good cop, but you're being a bad cop.
And then he says, what's it to ya?
Yeah, like there's
that.
Literally the bit where Ian McShane of Deadwood fame goes to him, don't shoot him because I'm the bad cop and you were good. Don't shoot him. And then he shoots him. It's very fun. I've never seen a movie like this where there are characters just directly saying what it's about. But there's a particular one scene, right? So those movies are about like the slow deterioration of a man and of a person, right? But in this movie, he's like, good cop, good cop, good cop. And then he goes and loses his arm. And then he goes and like bashes the shit out of a guy and threatens to shoot a woman. It's like he's really bad.
Yeah.
It's like, good cop, good cop, good cop, bad cop.
Well, maybe he turned bad when he lost his arm. And he went, this is enough.
Yeah, right.
And the bloody, bloody stump to the face was a turning point for our man Pat.
So the bit in the movie that for me is the most like amazing moment
is he gets his ex-girlfriend to, like, give him a lift there.
Yeah.
And then she watches him being a bad cop and beat up a person. And then, like, you, like, I'm watching this scene going, oh, man, he wanted to be a good cop, but now he's doing bad things.
Yeah.
But
how
if
awkward
anyone,
would that car ride have been, though?
Well, because that's it, right? Because then I was like, but why is she there? Because then he goes up to the feds, and then she just goes, for anyone who missed it, she just goes, you were a good cop, but you just did a bad thing. And then she's like, bye. And then she drives off. And she does that, like, a multiple points throughout the film.
Oh, yeah, she just pops in every once in a while to be like, oh.
It's a bit weird.
That was her purpose.
His arm.
She literally pops every once in a while and just goes, hey.
Hey. Just a reminder about the themes of this film.
Yeah.
All right, Huru. There's a bit in it when his hand has been chopped off and this nice nurse is, like, putting it, like bandaging it up, and she comes in and she's like, hey, you're not doing a very good job.
It's so weird.
And I'm like, and then, like, later, the next scene, she's like, sorry, I popped off there. Sorry, I got a bit mad. I'm like, but you, like, came and then you, like, saw that he had no hand, and then you're like, argh.
Who the fuck asked their ex for a lift to something like that? Like, genuinely. I remember, this was a few years back now, maybe 3 or 4 years. I was seeing this guy and he was over at my place and I ended it because there was, it was just
good
wasn't
for
going.
You, babe.
It was
good
just,
for
no,
you.
It just wasn't going anywhere. He wasn't a bad guy, it just wasn't going anywhere. And so we had that conversation. He was like, yeah. And he actually agreed. But of course, like, I don't think he would have agreed if I hadn't. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Anyway, and then he didn't have a car, so I had to drive him home. No, drive him to the train station. And that was weird because I'd had the conversation with him at home.
Yeah.
Then we had to get in the car and then we drove to the station and tried to make small talk. And it was very strange. So I actually can understand how awkward that would have been for Pat and not Michelle Monaghan.
Yeah, he should have just, like, asked one of the other crooked cops for a lift.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, Leguistamo's go.
Leguistamo, I thought that he wasn't given enough. I also felt like he was a bit miscast. Not his fault, just he was a bit miscast. And I think sometimes if you miscast someone, you need to rework the part.
Okay.
So I give this film 2.
Cool. I give it 2.5 for all the same reasons that Zach just said, except I don't think it was miscast because I think Johnny Legs can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a good point. But sorry, Johnny, if you're listening.
He's not.
I think it's not your fault.
Oh, my God. He commented on one of our things.
Yeah, we should have talked about that.
Yeah, but we didn't.
Oh, well.
Bye.
We're a bit tired today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.